This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In an era when kids look forward to the Sunday newspaper comics, my guest Cullen Murphy lived in the world where those comics were created. His father, John Cullen Murphy, drew a comic about a prize fighter called Big Ben Bolt. In 1970, he started drawing the popular comic strip Prince Valiant, about a Norse prince in the King Arthur era. Prince Valiant was created in 1937 by Hal Foster, who asked Cullen's father to do the illustrations after Foster's arthritis got bad. In 1980, Foster handed over the writing to Cullen. Cullen wrote Prince Valiant while his father continued to draw it for the next 24 years until his father's death. Cullen Murphy's new memoir, Cartoon County, is about his father and the surprising number of other cartoonists who lived near or in Fairfield County, Connecticut, where Cullen grew up in the 1950s and 60s. They included the artists and or writers behind Popeye, Little Orphan Annie, Blondie, Hagar the Horrible, and Nancy. In addition to writing Prince Valiant, Cullen Murphy was the managing editor of The Atlantic magazine for 20 years and has been an editor-at-large at Vanity Fair since 2006. Cullen Murphy, welcome back to Fresh Air. It must have been so interesting to grow up with all these adults who are cartoonists and comic writers, and they're having such interesting conversations, unlike the kinds of conversations the adults in my neighborhood had. The adults in your community were talking about comics a lot of the time. And I want you to read an excerpt of a conversation that you reprint from memory in your book. And this is between two comic book artists. Would you describe who's talking and then read us the conversation? I love this.
Sure, Terry, and it's great to be back with you again. So this is a conversation between Kurt Swan, who drew the Superman comic, and Jerry Dumas, who with Mort Walker produced Sam Strip and Sam and Silo. And the conversation opens with Jerry Dumas. They're at a diner. And Jerry says, "Why does Superman have a cape?" And Kurt says, "I don't know, Jerry." Dumas goes on, "Why does Superman's cape swirl around him even when he's standing in an office?" "I really don't know, Jerry." "When Superman undresses in a phone booth, how does he know his clothes will still be there when he gets back?" "I haven't the faintest idea, Jerry." "Can Superman fly when he's wearing his business suit on the outside with the costume underneath?" "Pauline, could you put a little brandy in this coffee?"
I love it. And what I love about this, too, is these are questions that, like, everybody has about Superman. And as it turns out, the person drawing Superman in this period had no idea what the answers were.
You know, it's funny, when you hung around cartoonists, even as a kid, you had the sense that the unreality that was their life and their work had become a kind of reality.
Describe what the Sunday comics were like when you were growing up surrounded by the guys who did the comics.
Well, they were glorious. So imagine a Sunday morning when 16 full pages of comics arrives with the newspaper. And the comics are so important that they wrap the newspaper. It's not like the front page of the Daily News or, you know, the Journal American with all the important headlines are wrapping the comics. It's the other way around. And these pages are the size of a newspaper broadsheet. And the color is beautiful. And this has been going on for decades, really since the turn of the century. And The pages were so big that for a kid, you could not realistically sit in a chair and read the comics. You had to spread them out across the floor, just like almost your comic strip image of a kid reading the comics. But it's hard to recapture what a big deal newspaper comics were for a long part of our history, and particularly at the very heart of the American century.
So I'm going to ask you to describe Prince Valiant, the comic strip that your father drew for decades and that you wrote for 24 years until your father died in 2004. Describe what the strip was about.
Prince Valiant was the son of a royal family of Thule in what is now Scandinavia. And when the strip began...
Is Thule made up or is that a real place?
Well, it's a real place in the context of the comics, which for me is real enough.
Okay.
But I think it's... I think it's made up. There is a place called Thule, but Hal Foster's Thule was a made-up place.
Okay.
And Prince Valiant's royal family was a made-up royal family. But guess, aren't they all? And Val, when the strip opens, is a young kid. He's escaped from political trauma in his homeland, and he arrives in King Arthur's Britain. And through a series of adventures, he's eventually knighted. He becomes a Knight of the Round Table. He marries Alita, Queen of the Misty Isles. They have twins and a couple of sons. And the adventures take him all over the world. They take Alita all over the world, and they take the children all over the world. I think by the time I stopped doing the strip, members of the family had been to every continent except Antarctica.
Wow. Okay. And it's written in this kind of like old medieval or dark ages kind of language. I mean, not the language that they really would have spoken, but our idea of what it might have sounded like. Can you read one of the captions for us to give us a taste of the language? And maybe you could read one that you wrote.
Sure. I'll give you one here in a second. But your description is right. It's kind of a modern person's idea of what older English was like, filtered through Walter Scott and then refiltered through me and my dad and Hal Foster. And here's the opening sequence of a particular episode. The picture in the background shows King Arthur's palace in ruins after a horrific battle. Camelot. The refugees who stream from Britain tell tales of horror and woe. The city of Marvel, once a golden jewel amid emerald fields, stands bent and tarnished, a forbidding fortress. The meadowlands are sear with drought. Where jousts took place, gallows sprout. It has been a year since Mordred seized the throne, and the common folk of Britain have learned how long a year can be.
It's kind of Shakespearean to end the first part with a rhyme, no?
I was thinking Jesse Jackson, but I'll take Shakespeare.
So one of the things your father used to do was pose for himself, taking Polaroid pictures of himself so he could use himself as a model. And you often were the person snapping the photos. Would you describe some of the ways that he posed and some of the things he wore while he posed?
I have thousands of these pictures. My father really never threw anything away. And something like the pictures that he took of himself, he always, I'm sure in the back of his mind, thought, oh, I can use one of these pictures again. But he never did. He just kept taking more pictures. Bear in mind that in a typical Prince Valiant strip, there might be, 20 human figures on a given Sunday, and they're all doing different things. And like other cartoonists, he knew enough anatomy. He had classical training. He could draw these from scratch, but it was a lot easier, and it would help with things like shadows and drama if he could have something to work with. So he would dress himself up in different costumes and take pictures of himself and adjust the lighting. And it would be things like, he would dress himself as a monk. He would dress himself as a knight. He would dress himself as a woman and put a wig on and a dress. He would lie on his back with his feet and his arms in the air as if he'd just been run through with a sword or fallen off a horse during a joust. He would have these expressions of, horrific anger or, ridiculous, preposterous laughter. And I have a collection of these that runs really from 1950, when he was doing a different strip, all the way up until shortly before his death. And it's the most remarkable and bizarre collection of family portraits that you can imagine having, and wonderful to look at.
You sometimes posed for your father. What was it like to see his rendering of you as a character in Prince Valiant?
Well, the first thing to say is that posing for my father was not fun. Watching him pose was fun because he was a natural actor and the camera loved him. And someone like myself is a bit of a stiffer personality when it comes to posing. Also, some of the things that he would be asking me to do were things that I wasn't really hot on doing. I remember one sequence, it was for a strip that he did called Big Band Bold, which is the strip that he did for 2 decades before he took over Prince Valiant. And I had to be a little kid from India. And this meant, you know, taking off my shirt, putting on a pair of short pants, and having the diapers from one of my siblings. I have 7 siblings, and there was always someone in diapers, and having one of their diapers wrapped around my head as a turban. You know, this was not an ideal afternoon.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Cullen Murphy, and his memoir about his father, who drew the Prince Valiant comic strip, is called Cartoon County. We'll be right back after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Cullen Murphy, an editor-at-large at Vanity Fair and former managing editor of The Atlantic. He's written a new memoir about his father, who started drawing the comic strip Big Ben Bolt in 1950 and in 1970 took over drawing the popular strip Prince Valiant. In 1980, Cullen took over writing Prince Valiant and worked with his father until his death in 2004. The memoir Cartoon County is about his father and the many other comic strip and comic book artists who lived in or near Fairfield County, Connecticut, where Cullen grew up, in the era of the golden age of the Sunday newspaper comics. So in the final days when you were writing Prince Valiant and your father was drawing it, that whole world was dying. You know, the Sunday comics no longer meant what they used to. And Prince Valiant, which is still being published today, but it didn't have, I don't think it had the kind of audience by then. But you have a quote in here about that world dying that I'd like you to read for us.
It's from a conversation with Dick Brown, who drew High and Lois and created Hagar the Horrible. And I'd gone to visit him and his wife at their home. We were just talking about the world of cartoonists in Fairfield County that we had all known. You could feel that it was beginning to dissipate. People were moving. Older cartoonists were dying. This very special place in 2 decades was not going to be what it was like. And I asked him about that. And he said, "I feel right now the way I used to feel as a kid when the movie was over. The credits would start to roll. The lights would start to come up. And I would walk slowly backwards up the slanting aisle, watching the screen, just trying to make it last as long as I could."
It's really a beautiful, beautiful quote about how wonderful movies and parts of life are. You said that your father was a pack rat. You know, he had all these like costumes and I don't know what else he collected, but it sounds like he collected a lot of stuff. And when
I can give you his spelling bees from Chicago Public Schools in 1925, if that helps.
Yeah, so you still have that.
Well, you're in this funny situation, things you never would have saved but can't bear to throw away. You know, after he died, when we started going through the studio looking for things, my Lord, the stuff that was there, you know, some of it really wonderful, you know, original cartoon strips by, you know, George McManus and other folks. Also, all his sketchbooks from when he was doing life drawing classes at the Art Students League in the 1930s. And I have to say, going through it is a great experience, as was going through the letters and the diaries of his. You know, you begin to see a person just come alive in front of you, and you come to appreciate that this person, even before you existed just as you do now. It's kind of a hypnotic experience.
You know, I'm always interested when somebody's parent dies, what they do with the things, the possessions, the collections that their parent left behind, and deciding whether to throw it out or give it away or keep it. And if you're going to keep it, where exactly are you going to keep it? And so since your father had so much and it has value for you still, where are you keeping it? What are you doing with it? And what do you think its future will be? I mean, he died in 2004, so that's a while ago.
We've done several things. The good news is that all of this material will be preserved. All of us in the family, you know, took portions of it. You know, the rule of thumb when we were going through the studio and just trying to see what was there was that anything from his hand was going to be kept. Anything that he wrote, anything that he drew, and really anything about him that was very personal would be kept. And that includes, of course, all those Polaroids. And beyond that, there was a lot of work that was, you know, it was beyond the capacity of any one person to keep properly and preserve. So a great deal of material has been given to institutions. There are two in particular. One of them is the Billy Ireland collection at Ohio State University, which is the world's greatest compendium of original comic art. The other place is Brown University. When my father was in the Pacific during the war, he was on General MacArthur's staff and did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of drawings and paintings during that time. Most of this material is now at Brown University, which has a big military collection.
So I have another Prince Valiant question for you. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones.
I've actually read Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. Do you think that Game of Thrones is in any way kind of satisfying some of the same needs as Prince Valiant used to, but in a much more sexually, in a much more explicit way in terms of sex and violence?
Well, it absolutely is. I remember when I first picked up the George Martin books, it was not my idea to do it. It was my children were saying, you've got to read these. So for Christmas, I think I got the first three of them, and I started in and couldn't put them down. I thought they were extremely well done, and I was captivated. I actually had to just stop, because otherwise the rest of my life would have been taken over by just reading Game of Thrones. But I think that Game of Thrones has many of the same elements that appealed to people about Prince Valiant, although in a much more aggressive and, you know, sometimes prurient way. The one thing that Prince Valiant didn't do that Game of Thrones does all the time is kill off its leading characters.
Colin Murphy, thank you so much for talking with us.
Terry, thank you. It's been great.
Colin Murphy's new memoir is called Cartoon County. After we take a short break, our guest will be Guillermo del Toro, director of the new movie The Shape of Water. This is Fresh Air.